Congressman Rajah Krishnamurthy's on the phone. Good morning, Congressman. How are you today?
Hey, good morning, John. How are you?
Good. I wanted to talk to you about the impeachment proceedings, but I also mentioned as we were doing that commercial for the Lung Association, you've been a big advocate of doing something to protect people from vaping devices, e-cigarettes, stuff like that, right?
Yeah, especially our youth. We have a youth vaping epidemic. Almost 28% of our high schoolers are vaping, and just this past week we learned that almost 11% of our middle schoolers are vaping, John, and this is deeply troubling, and, you know, as a parent of three, I'm doing everything I can in Congress to fight it.
Congressman, I saw that statistic, too, and I could not believe it. I mean, I don't have kids in high school right now. I have a niece and a nephew, though. More than one out of four high school kids are vaping. The incidence of cigarette smoking is down. I mean, it's now nowhere near that. But it's amazing to me that over 25% of the kids are vaping or using an e-cigarette.
It is, and a lot of them are basically attracted to vaping through flavors. There are numerous flavors that are advertised and marketed, everything from Tutti Frutti to mango to mint.
Yeah.
And a lot of kids don't even know that it contains nicotine or anything that could hurt them.
So I wonder if these injuries and illnesses are a result of them using legitimate products, or is it in fact not that they're vaping but black market products, THC, things like that?
Could be. The CDC and the FDA are jointly investigating this issue, and it appears that they're starting to find that there's a lot of illicit products, but also THC involved, and when the combination happens, it's as you know, deadly.
One last thing about that, then, Congressman. So, what are you all going to do about that? Are you trying to federally ban the flavored ones, or what can you do about that?
So on the flavor ban, so to speak, the Trump administration back on September 11th announced that they were going to issue a flavor ban through the FDA's regulatory authority, and we were all cheering because that was exactly the right thing to do. And then, unfortunately, despite the fact that the president promised that it would happen in a couple weeks from September 11th, here we are 3 months later and nothing's happened. And so we just had a hearing this week to ask the FDA administrator what's going on. We're still hopeful, but we're concerned that the industry has gotten to the White House and may have halted progress in that direction.
What is the timeline for the impeachment proceedings then next week? Do you know, Raj? I know that's not your committee. You were in intelligence, and this is judiciary, but my understanding is they'll write up the articles. Can you give me sort of an overview of what happens next?
So here are the steps. I don't know the timeline, and I'm not really sure that the deadlines have been set for any of these steps. But the first step is, if they choose to do so, they would draw up articles of impeachment. Then the next step would be to vote on those articles of impeachment within their committee. And then if it gets approved by the committee, then it would go to the full House, and a vote would have to happen before it was sent to the Senate.
Oh, I see. Okay. Boy, it's funny because every time you say, okay, we're there, we're not even there yet. Your committee had hearings, then the next committee had hearings. Now that committee's going to draw up articles, and then that committee will vote on the articles. Is that correct?
That's my understanding, yes. And I think that, quite frankly, I think that things are still fluid with regard to those articles. I'm not a member of that committee, so I can't tell you, who's actually putting pen to paper and so forth. But, conceptually, there are, different views about those articles and so forth.
Is there something that was most pivotal to you in either the intelligence or the Judiciary Committee hearings? Was there some moment where you said, okay, now we have to go forward?
I think my moment came before that, when Mick Mulvaney, came out in a press conference, I think in mid-October, and basically said, of course there was a quid pro quo. Military aid was held up for an investigation of the president's domestic rivals. And then he said, get over it. And I think when he said that, I think that caused a lot of people, not just myself, to basically say, look, we are not going to accept that attitude or that approach to wrongdoing.
You know, that's interesting, Congressman. I mean, you'll vote, I won't, but I remember when Mick Mulvaney said that, and it was shocking, and it got a lot of attention, and the next day, he walked it back. He said, I didn't mean get over it. Of course, we're trading favors for money, but that's the way he put it. And his soft peddling of it the second day was, of course, there's horse trading in politics, but we weren't trading aid to Ukraine for the investigation. I wonder if somebody like you should not remember, repeat, and consider that as well.
So I think that there's always quote-unquote horse trading, and of course we engage in understandings and agreements, like in return for our aid, you will be sure to invest that aid in some kind of economic development initiative, and there will be anti-corruption initiatives. But never has it been legal to use an official act to then, gain a private benefit. In other words, in return for this official act, namely giving aid, you will help me in my political campaign. Steve, investigate X.
Steve Bertrand from our newsroom is also in the studio. Steve?
Congressman, I'm interested in the eventual articles of impeachment. And as I understand it, there's a debate now among Democrats about whether to include a count or two from the Mueller report in this Ukrainian part of the impeachment. And I just wonder where you stand on that.
I don't want to get ahead of my Judiciary Committee colleagues. I think that my own opinion, for what it's worth, is we want to bring maximum clarity to the proceedings. And the Ukraine issues, to me, are rather easier to understand than anything else.
So adding counts would muddy the waters.
It could. It would. It would just add potentially to the number of issues that need to be clarified and explained. That doesn't mean that it can't be. It can't serve as kind of a backdrop for what happened, because after all, I remember distinctly Bob Mueller came in and testified on July 24th, and he specifically said, "As we sit here now, we should do everything we can to make sure no foreign power interferes in our upcoming election." And then the very next day, July 25th, President Trump calls President Zelensky and asks him to interfere in our election by investigating his arrival. So we can, I think it's fine to talk about the Mueller report in that regard. I would just say that it would require more explanation if it becomes part of the article. That's probably more of a factual statement than anything else.
Fair enough. 30 seconds left, Congressman. The one professor who was able to testify on the Republicans' behalf yesterday said that we're moving too quickly on this. Is that a concern of yours?
Gosh, I think that with all of the depositions and all of the hearing testimony and the opportunities for the other side to participate, I don't see how we're moving too quickly. I do wish we were able to access more documents and talk to more witnesses. If that lengthened the proceeding, that would be fine. But as of right now, I think there's wrongdoing occurring as we speak in the White House with regard to our foreign policy. So if for no other reason, we need to wrap up and make sure we stop it.
8th Congressional Representative Rajah Krishnamurthy from Schaumburg. Thank you, Congressman. We appreciate your time this morning.
Hey, thank you, guys. Thank you so much, John.
Have a good day.